or football players. We probably rather not be heavyweights. At the same time, however, when it comes to politics or intellectual pursuits, we don't want to be thought of as a lightweight. But that's just an idiomatic usage of the word that's used to insult someone. He's a lightweight. She's a lightweight. Well, it occurred to me as I looked at the story of King Belshazzar, the son of King Nebuchadnezzar, that God pronounces a judgment on him that is also not literal, but it's sort of the same idea. You may not catch on at first, but let's read Daniel 5, and I think we'll all get the idea as we talk about it just a little bit. We're going to read quite a bit before we release the kids because we want them to hear this exciting passage. But it starts with this very short verse. King Belshazzar gave a great banquet for 1,000 of his nobles and drank wine with them. Now, Belshazzar's name is a little confusing since you may remember that Nebuchadnezzar had called Daniel Belteshazzar. And we'll talk about the names of Daniel and his three friends a little bit more later. But now, for now, suffice it to say that if we hadn't thought about it, Nebuchadnezzar was actually a very religious man. He was a polytheist. He believed in lots of gods, but he wanted to worship all of the gods. So, in a sense, he was too religious. But the main god of the Babylonians was named Bel, B-E-L, just one L. So Nebuchadnezzar incorporated his name into the names, the god's name, into the names that he gave to Daniel and his own son. The suffix Shazzar is something about protection. And so Belteshazzar, Daniel's name given by the Babylonians, means Bel protects his life. Belshazzar means Bel protect the king. And that would mean the baby that he named who would be the future king. And so these names and those that were given to Daniel's friends actually play into the story in very significant ways. So Belshazzar has now become king after Nebuchadnezzar died, and he's a bit of a party animal, so he has this big party. So let's read on. While Belshazzar was drinking his wine, he gave orders to bring in the gold and silver goblets that Nebuchadnezzar, his father, had taken from the temple in Jerusalem, so that the king and his nobles, his wives, and his concubines might drink from them. So they brought in the gold goblets that had been taken from the temple of God in Jerusalem, and the king and his nobles, his wives, and his concubines drank from them. As they drank the wine, they praised the gods of gold and silver, of bronze, iron, wood, and stone. Suddenly, the fingers of a human hand appeared and wrote on the plaster of the wall near the lampstand in the royal palace. And the king watched the hand as it wrote. His face turned pale, and he was so frightened that his legs became weak and his knees were knocking. The king summoned the enchanters, astrologers, and diviners. And then he said to these wise men of Babylon, "Whoever reads the writing and tells me what it means will be clothed in purple and have a gold chain placed around his neck, and he will be made the third highest ruler in the kingdom." Then all the king's wise men came in, but they could not read the writing or tell the king what it meant. So King Belshazzar became even more terrified, and his face grew more pale. His nobles were baffled. The queen, hearing the voices of the king and his nobles, came into the banquet hall. "May the king live forever," she said. "Don't be alarmed. Don't look so pale. There is a man in your kingdom who has the spirit of the holy gods in him. In the time of your father, he was found to have insight and intelligence and wisdom like that of the gods. Your father, King Nebuchadnezzar, appointed him chief of the magicians, enchanters, astrologers, and diviners. He did this because Daniel, whom the king called Belteshazzar, was found to have a keen mind and knowledge and understanding, and also the ability to interpret dreams, explain riddles, and solve difficult problems. Call for Daniel, and he will tell you what the writing means." All right, so I want to pause here and ask why Belshazzar did not know or did not acknowledge Daniel in Daniel's God. We can't really know exactly, but based on what we've learned so far about Belshazzar, I think it's fair to guess that Belshazzar was not a very serious person. As I suggested, more of a party animal than a sincere statesman. And so if he had been provided with an education, and Nebuchadnezzar did believe in education, that's what that first chapter was all about taking all of these young men from foreign cultures and educating them in the ways of Babylon. Well, let's just say that if Belshazzar was put in a school for education like those young men, he was probably the kid in class who was a bit more interested in shooting spit wads, than listening to the lessons. But think about it. His wife knew about Daniel, but he didn't, or at least he didn't remember, is what the reality is. So why was that? Well, let's read on as Daniel interprets the incident. So Daniel was brought in before the king, and the king said to him, "Are you Daniel, one of the exiles my father the king brought from Judah? I have heard that the spirit of gods is in you and that you have insight and intelligence and outstanding wisdom. The wise men and enchanters were brought before me to read this writing and tell me what it means, but they could not explain it. Now I have heard that you are able to give interpretation and to solve difficult problems. If you can read this writing and tell me what it means, you will be clothed in purple and have a gold chain placed around your neck, and you will be made the third highest ruler in the kingdom." Then Daniel answered the king, "You may keep your gifts for yourself and give your rewards to someone else. Nevertheless, I will read the writing for the king and tell him what it means. Your Majesty, the Most High God gave your father Nebuchadnezzar sovereignty and greatness and glory and splendor. Because of the high position he gave him, all the nations and peoples of every language dreaded and feared him. Those the king wanted to put to death, he put to death. Those he wanted to spare, he spared. Those he wanted to promote, he promoted. And those he wanted to humble, he humbled. But when his heart became arrogant and hardened with pride, he was deposed from his royal throne and stripped of his glory. He was driven away from people and lived and given the mind of an animal. He lived with the wild donkeys and ate grass like the ox. And his body was drenched with the dew of heaven until he acknowledged the Most High God is sovereign over all kingdoms on earth and sets over them anyone he wishes. But you, Belshazzar, his son, have not humbled yourself, though you knew all this." See, he didn't know. He just chose not to acknowledge. "Instead, you have set yourself up against the Lord of heaven. You had the goblets from the temple brought to you, and you and your nobles, your wives, and your concubines drank wine from them. You praised the gods of silver and gold, of bronze, iron, wood, and stone, which cannot see or hear or understand, but you did not honor the God who holds in his hand your life and all your ways. Therefore, he sent the hand that wrote the inscription. This is the inscription that was written." This was written in Aramaic, which some Babylonians understood, but apparently not. But this is when the language that was spoken of, most often spoken in Jesus' day, and sort of this began being spoken among the Jews in the time of the in their time in Babylon. So this is this inscription that was written: "Mene, Mene, Tekel, Parsin." Here's what these words mean: "Mene means God has numbered the days of your reign and brought it to an end. Tekel, you have been weighed on the scales and found wanting. Perez, your kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and Persians." So think about that line. You have been weighed in the scales and found wanting. Essentially, Belshazzar has been found to be all of the things that we've already talked about. And even though Nebuchadnezzar failed in many ways, he had never, Nebuchadnezzar himself never grasped the reality that God was not just the God of gods, as he said, but that God was the only God. But Nebuchadnezzar did finally humble himself, and he wrote that amazing account of his own life that we read last Sunday. I've neglected to mention that that made Nebuchadnezzar an author of the Bible. He's never listed that way, but you know his one chapter is longer than several of the New Testament letters. But Belshazzar, on the other hand, has been found to be a lightweight, an unserious person who uses his power and his position to support an unserious lifestyle without a thought of developing character traits such as humility. He could have just read that one letter his father had written, chapter 4, and taken it seriously, but instead he fell victim to the truth of that saying, those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. Okay, well, let's dismiss the kids to their class. Betty is going to be taking them today, or maybe Morgan's going to be helping out so that they can divide the kids as we are trying to do, so that the older kids are not with the youngest kids. Okay, of course, this is more than a reminder to pay attention in history class. This really means that we need to go beyond that and humble ourselves and honor God. Now, one thing that Belshazzar did that was similar to his father's ways was that he kept at least, you know, this one promise. Strangely enough, then at Belshazzar's command, Daniel was clothed in purple, a gold chain was placed around his neck, and he was proclaimed the third highest ruler in the kingdom. However, my first title for this lesson was Too Little, Too Late. And this is why I thought of that chapter. That very night, Belshazzar, king of the Babylonians, was slain. And Darius the Mede took over the kingdom at the age of 62. Okay, so what about those names and what we should learn from those names? Well, here's a good question. First of all, did Nebuchadnezzar really want to honor the other cultures and their gods, or was he really trying to force them into adopting his culture and his gods? Well, I'm not really sure whether Nebuchadnezzar himself knew his own heart on that question. Maybe he believed that he was sincere and he did believe that it could work. But there's a pretty good hint at the truth in the names that he gave to Daniel and his friends. He renamed all of them. Look back at chapter 1, where he chose the most outstanding young men he could find in each of the cultures that he had conquered. Among those who were chosen were some from Judah: Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. The chief official gave them new names. To Daniel, the name Belteshazzar; to Hananiah, Shadrach; to Mishael, Meshach; and to Azariah, Abednego. Now, in America, most of us give our children the names of someone that we love or admire, maybe, or possibly names just based on liking the sound, you know, of the name. And so, but now some seem to just be looking for a unique name, if you haven't noticed. According to nameberry.com, unusual baby names trending right now include Olympia, Hart, H-A-R-T, Alistair, Birdie, Coco. Would you want to be named Coco? Fielder, Henrietta, Lumi, West, and Zebedee. There's the only Bible name. For those wanting something ultra rare and unusual, however, there are names given to fewer than 5 babies last year that include Conran, Madrigal, Ocean, O-C-E-O-N, and Plum. So, but in the Bible, names usually were given with hopes and ambitions or something else very significant in mind. And here's what one writer says about Daniel and his friends' name changes that were given in Babylon. He says, each name Daniel and his friends were given carried a meaning associated with a different Babylonian deity. Abednego means servant of Nebo, for example. Belteshazzar, the name given to Daniel, means Bel protects his life. The meaning of the name Daniel, the Jewish word, the Daniel, his own name, is God is my judge. Now think about the difference there. The suffix of Daniel's name and Mishael's is El, Daniel. Mishael was Shadrach, which refers to Elohim, one of the ways that they referred to the God of Israel. And Azariah and Hananiah carry the suffix IAH or YAH, which is short for Yahweh, the covenant name of God. So the article suggests the boys' names were changed as a way of encouraging them to forget God and traditions of their homeland and become conformed to the ways of the gods of Babylon. It was a forced assimilation. Nebuchadnezzar wanted Daniel and his friends to conform to the pattern of this world. And a name change was one of the steps toward that goal. And I think that's right. And I believe that as good and noble as the idea of pluralism might sound, it really doesn't seem to work very well, even in regard to cultural traditions, much less when it comes to morals and religious faith. Remember the working definition of pluralism. Pluralism is a state of society in which diverse groups maintain their culture or interest. So think about the contrast of Daniel's Jewish name versus the name given by Nebuchadnezzar. Belteshazzar, Nebuchadnezzar's name, Bel protects his life. Now, I think that although Nebuchadnezzar was corrupted by the power that he was given, I think he believed that he was trying to do some very progressive and enlightened things in his empire. Now, think about it. Rather than murdering all of the nobles in the cultures that he conquered, and turning the common people into slaves, that was what most conquerors did at that time. He brought the nobles and many others to Babylon with the idea that he would bless them with his superior culture and take advantage of their talents, yes, but maybe not so much their cultures. Now, giving Daniel a name that proclaims that his God protects Daniel was in his mind a generous gift. And yet, from the beginning, Daniel knew who he was and where his protection came from. So Nebuchadnezzar probably didn't know or care about Daniel's Jewish name or what it meant. Yes, he was claiming to promote pluralism, but like most who claim to do that, his true goal was to eliminate meaningful competition with his own beliefs. Now, Nebuchadnezzar was a slow learner, as we've suggested, but God provided those powerful lessons that we've seen. And finally, Nebuchadnezzar is humbled and he acknowledges God as the one who gave him all of that power and responsibility. The lesson he learned is in Daniel's name, and that is that God is my judge. Now, remember what Belshazzar's name means, his son. Belshazzar means Bel protect the king. It's a hope, you know, a request. Now, his father was a slow learner, but Belshazzar seems to be a non-learner. And so the final lesson of his life is that, in fact, Daniel's Jewish name describes Belshazzar's position in the world, just as Daniel's. He had every opportunity, but he failed to take advantage of the lessons suffered by his father. And now he learns that lesson too late. Bel is not going to protect him. God is his judge. And Bel has no power to protect him from paying for his evil actions. and his evil heart. He's been weighed in the balance, and he has been found wanting. And this is the kind of scale that they used in those days. If there was anything good or noble in Belshazzar, it was outweighed by the evil, the corruption in his heart. It didn't, you know, the good didn't even come close to balancing it out, much less tipping the scales to his benefit. So when it came to goodness, Belshazzar was a lightweight. So where do we fit into this picture? Well, here's the first question. Can the gods of our culture protect us? Bel couldn't protect Belshazzar. Can the gods of our culture protect us? Well, think about who those gods are. Money, power, and pleasure, predominantly. So how much does your money care about you? When you were considering a bad investment or a purchase that would put you into major debt or a night of gambling, you know, did your money ever give you a warning or stop you altogether? Money may seem like security or protection, you know, of our demise, but it really is not. Our ideas about saving money may be good, or they may be as creative as Don's wife in the clip, but we actually can save money. However, money cannot save us. And beyond that, we can't even keep what we save when we save money. It's not really in our control. So maybe power or influence can make us secure. The other gods. Well, look at those in the high positions of power in our world. Think about them. In America, presidents have it for 4 years or 8 years. And all politicians seem willing to do almost anything to keep their positions or move up the ladder to higher positions, if possible. You know, maybe you've heard the saying that every senator looks in the mirror and sees a president. Well, the question is, why is the desire to get and keep influence or power so strong that it will corrupt and often destroy people in those positions? I can't explain it to my own satisfaction, to be honest, but I can say one thing for sure. It is not because power or influence makes a person secure, right? The evidence seems to indicate that it's the other way around. The more power you have, the less secure you seem to feel. Now, let's translate that into our own lives. We're not politicians. But for the most part, our power and influence are limited to our positions with our husbands or wives, our children, our jobs, our recreation, even our church family. If we are tyrants as husbands and fathers, I would argue that it's usually because we're insecure in that role. You know, whenever I would finally lose it and become too harsh with my own kids, you know, it was because I couldn't focus on the best solution to the problem. I just didn't feel good about coming up with a good solution. If a wife grows cold toward her husband, you know, she's most likely trying to manipulate him into doing something in a better way or, protesting about the way that he's doing things. If we don't put everything we can into our work, we're exercising our power. Even if we're not really communicating honestly about what we're doing. You know, it may be our chicken-hearted way of expressing our objection to the pay or the conditions or expectations, you know, without actually communicating, you know, with those who are in authority over us. See, all of those can be power plays. But what they really reveal is weakness on our parts. The real effective power play is to humble ourselves and serve in a loving way, in a humble way, regardless of what others do to us. See, that disarms them. But how do we manage to do that? How can we find the will to do that? Well, only with the power of the Spirit of Christ. We access that Spirit by first embracing the answer to our next question, and that is, who is our judge? No one likes to be judged by others. One legitimate reason for that is that others may be no better than us. You know, they may be worse than us. We don't like to be judged, even if we think the judge is the best person we know, but we really hate it when we have a boss who we believe is intellectually or morally inferior, right? So as evil as Nebuchadnezzar and even Belshazzar were, Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego managed to do their jobs better than anyone else. Well, how did they do that? They didn't let it bother them that the kings, Nebuchadnezzar and Belshazzar, thought that they were their judges and thought that they had the power of life and death over them. Daniel and Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego knew who their judge really was, and they knew that he only wanted the very best for them. So they didn't let it bother them that Belshazzar and Nebuchadnezzar were tyrants. So we may resent paying taxes and obeying stupid laws in a state that seems to have lost all sense of balance, but we can and should be the best of all citizens, regardless of whether the government appreciates us or not. We don't do it to honor the state. We do it to honor Christ. Look at what Paul says much later on. Slaves, obey your earthly masters with respect and fear, and with sincerity of heart, just as you would obey Christ. Obey them not only to win their favor when their eye is on you, but as slaves of Christ, doing the will of God from your heart. Now think about that. If that principle applied to slaves, how much more does it apply to us? Now, that doesn't mean that it's wrong to change jobs if you want to. Slaves were advised to gain their freedom if they could. Were you a slave when you were called? Don't let it trouble you. Although, if you can gain your freedom, do so. For the one who was a slave when called to faith in the Lord is actually the Lord's freed person. Similarly, the one who was free when called is Christ's slave. Okay? So the thing is, those who are in positions of power are subject to God's power, whether they acknowledge it or not. And we are really doing our best for Christ, not just for them, whether they get that or not. So as long as we have a job, we need to do the best that we can, because it is for Christ. And it reflects on Christ if they know that we call ourselves Christians, right? Last and most important question. Are we being weighed on the scales of justice? Yes, we are. When God is called righteous, he is being described in his role as our judge. The bad news is that if we are weighed in those scales without faith in Christ, we will all be weighed in the scales and will be found wanting, just like Belshazzar. None of us are heavyweights when it comes to goodness. We're all lightweights. That is, when our goodness or worthiness is weighed without Christ. You know, Mark's goodness is never going to be heavier than Mark's sin. The good news is that Jesus jumps on the scale with us. And so here's how it balances out. Mark with Jesus is a lot heavier than the evil that Mark can commit. And that's true for every one of us. So your homework for this week is to read Romans 5 and 6 especially, but you can read the whole letter, and it's all about God's judgment and why he judges and how we are freed from judgment through Christ. He says this, God demonstrates his own love for us in this. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. And later on, don't you know that all of us who are baptized into Christ Jesus were baptized into his death? We were therefore buried with him through baptism into death, in order that, just as Christ was raised from the dead through the glory of the Father, we too may live a new life. For we know that our old self was crucified with him, so that the body ruled by sin might be done away with, that we should no longer be slaves to sin, because anyone who has died has been set free from sin. Now, if we died with Christ, we believe that we will also live with him. Let's pray together.